As we continue our study in the book of Job, we're still in the second chapter of Job, ready to begin at the 7th verse. We see at this point that God has allowed Satan to do everything he can to get Job to curse God. First of all, he took away all of his possessions. All of his earthly possessions, including his 10 children, were taken from him. The children were died. That didn't work. Then he attacked Job's body, and he caused his body to be covered with sores from the sole of his foot to the top of his head. And this would be a very painful condition, one that would really put Job in a state of misery and actual torment. Verse 7 says, "So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot to his crown." We do not know exactly what condition this was that Job had. It doesn't matter what name we give it. We can be sure that Satan was very thorough in his torment of Job. He had already failed with his first devastating attack upon Job. He had no intention of failing now. And we do not know how much Satan may have a hand in the diseases which we have today. And it may even be with God's permission, just like God gave in the case of Job here. Whether we're being tested for godly behavior, or whether we're being punished for ungodly behavior, should God suffer that roaring lion to have his will against any of us, how miserable would he soon make us. Verse 8 says, "And he took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes." Here we see how strangely Job treated these terrible afflictions. Instead of using healing ointments or salves, he takes a potsherd, a piece of broken pottery, to scrape himself with. What a sad state this poor man had come to. When a person is sick and sore, he might bear it better if he is well nursed and cared for. Often, even poor people have someone to help care for them when they are ill. Even Lazarus got some ease from the tongues of the dogs that licked his sores. But poor Job has no help as he seeks for some relief. His only treatment is what he does with his own hands. His children and servants are dead. We do not read of his wife helping him. There seemed to be no available physician, and it seemed that none of those whom Job had helped had enough honor or gratitude to help him in his disease. Apparently no one lent him a hand to dress or to wipe his running sores, either because the disease was so disagreeable or because they were afraid of contracting the disease themselves. All he does to his sores is to scrape them. No bandages, no ointment, not washed or kept clean, no healing plasters, no pain medicine, no antibiotics, nothing for rest or sedation. The only operation is the scraping of the ulcers, which when they started to heal would cover his body with a crust. Job treats his body by scraping it with a piece of broken pottery, a remedy which one would think as bad as the disease, no surgeon's instruments, but that which would only crudely rake over his sores and add to his pain rather than give relief. Sick people need the help and guidance of others, for often they are bad managers of themselves. Even the physician who treats himself often as a fool for a patient. Instead of lying down in a nice, soft, and warm bed, he sat among the ashes. He evidently had a bed, for we do not read of his house being burned or robbed, but he chose to sit in the ashes. He seems to be taking on the posture of penance as he lay in dust and ashes. Thus did he humble himself under the mighty hand of God. He speaks of this in chapter 7, verse 5, where he says, "My flesh is clothed with worms and clods of dust. My skin is broken and become loathsome." In the next verse, verse 9, "Then said his wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die." Here we see Satan working through Job's wife to try to get Job to curse God. That's exactly what Satan wants Job to do. When all of his other possessions are taken, his wife was left with him to be a tempter to him. Satan is so sly and crafty, he doesn't miss a chance to gain the victory over those who serve God. If Satan leaves anything he has the power to take, it is for the purpose of bringing trouble to his prey. In this case, he left Job's wife. It is his policy to send temptation to us by the hand of those who are dear to us, as he tempted Adam by Eve and Christ by Peter. Matthew 16:21-23, "From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. So we must be on guard to not be tempted by those that, who we hold closely and whose opinion we value. We may be tempted by those who are nearest to us. We see Job then, with all his sores and physical afflictions, and also this nagging woman tempting him. Notice how she tempts Job. She says, Dost thou still retain thy integrity? Will nothing cure you of your religion? Are you such a coward that you continue to serve this God after he stripped you of all your possessions, and now you wallow in the dust with your sores? Is this a God to be loved and served? Do you not have a right to live like a normal human? Thus Satan tries to draw us away from God by having others suggest things to turn us away from our faith, implying that God delights in the hardships of his creatures. Satan also uses the tool of scoffing and mocking those who are faithful. We should expect this, but we are fools if we let it influence us. We may very well say to our tempters, How can you be so foolish as to be ungodly when you might serve the living God and live? Yet Job's wife dares him to do his the worst. Curse God and die, she says. Do not wait for God. End your troubles yourself by ending your life. Be your own deliverer by being your own executor. Curse God and kill thyself. These are two of the most despised of all of Satan's temptations. Either one of these are bad things to do. Satan assaults many a person with one or both of these options. Yet nothing is more contrary to the natural conscience than blaspheming God, and nothing more contrary to natural instinct than self-murder. Therefore, the suggestion of either of these actions must certainly come from the devil. Sadly, though, in most cases, there are some who are overcome by even this devil-induced temptation, thinking it is a way out of their misery. We rather pray, Lord, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Those who are wise and know the truth know that either one of these options, cursing God or taking his own life, is something that leads to very bad consequences. The 10th verse of Job, the 2nd chapter, says, But he said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? Job bravely resists and overcomes the temptations given to him by his wife. He gave her an answer which showed his strong resolve not to leave God, but to serve him and keep his integrity. Satan had spared Job's ability to speak because he wanted him to curse God. We must believe that righteous Job treated his wife with kindness, but in the case of this temptation, he was much displeased. Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. He does not call her a fool or an atheist, nor does he use any indecent language, as those who are suffering are apt to do and think they may be excused, but he shows her the evil of what she said. She spoke the language of the infidels and idolaters, who, when they, according to Isaiah 8:21, fret themselves and curse their king and their God. We have reason to believe that in a house as religious as Job's was, his wife had been a God-fearing person, but now with all their wealth and comfort and family gone, she could not bear the loss with the same steadfastness that Job had. But Job could not bear her attempt to undo him without becoming provoked. Temptations to curse God ought to be rejected with the greatest speed and ought not to be taken lightly. Whoever persuades you to throw your faith away must be regarded as our enemy, to whom, if we yield, it is to our peril. Job did not curse God, and then use Adam's excuse, The woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. This excuse is a reflection on God and his divine plan. Job could have cursed God and then blamed his wife, like Adam blamed Eve. Now, if you curse God, you alone shall bear the consequences. You cannot blame someone else. Job reasoned with his wife's foolish suggestion. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble? Job not only scolds his wife, but he tries to convince her he is right. And for the faithful, It is not hard to give a reason to serve God, even though we have been stripped of all of our possessions. Job reasons that blessings and troubles, though contrary to each other, come from the hand of God, and therefore in both we serve God, with thankfulness for the good and without complaint for the bad. Isaiah 45:7, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Job asks, shall we not receive evil? We should expect to receive evil, so we will be better prepared for it when it comes. 1 Peter 4:12, beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. When we receive evil or trouble, we are submitting to the will of God in it. Philippians 1:29, for unto you it is given, in the behalf of Christ, not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake. We are to learn to not only accept those times of trouble, but we are to be able to survive and function during these times. Philippians 4:11-13, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content, for I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. So Job reasons with his wife as she urges him to curse God and die. Shall we receive so much good as we have all these years from the hand of God, all this peace and prosperity which we have enjoyed together, and now shall we refuse to receive trouble when God sees fit to lay it on us? When we consider all the mercy and grace given to us, just in spiritual matters such as salvation, this should make us better able to receive our afflictions. If we receive our share of the common good during the 7 years of plenty, shall we not also receive our share of the common evil during the years of famine? He who feels the privilege should prepare for the loss of the privilege. Even if we have so much that pleases us, why can we not be content with that which pleases God? Our comforts become more valuable to us when we also receive some afflictions, lest we should be exalted above measure. 2 Corinthians 12:7-9, and lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. So Paul had some physical discomfort. He had this thorn in the flesh, this messenger of Satan sent to buffet him. He felt the pain. He felt the discomfort. He felt the problem very acutely. And he went to the Lord three times, asking the Lord to remove it. He besought the Lord thrice. And the Lord said that, my grace is sufficient for thee. He left the thorn in the flesh. He left the thing that was sent to buffet him. He did not remove it, but he gave Paul the power to bear it. Some physical hardships may be of benefit to our spiritual well-being. If we receive so much good for the body, shall we not receive some good for the soul? In Hebrews 12:9-11, furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us and gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. So Job still held fast to his integrity, and Satan's purpose against him was defeated. In all this, Job did not sin with his lips, the Bible says. During this time of his wife's temptation, Job did not speak a word amiss. This speaks very well of Job. It shows that his heart was filled with the things of God, and the abundance of the good outweighed any bad and triumphed over the bad influences. Psalm 30:32, if thou hast done foolishly in lifting up thyself, or if thou hast thought evil, lay thine hand upon thy mouth. Job did not forget the character of a perfect and upright man. James 3:2, for in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. In Psalm 17:3, Thou hast proved mine heart. Thou hast visited me in the night. Thou hast tried me, and shalt find nothing. I am purposed that my mouth shall not transgress. In verse 11, we have another element introduced into Job's situation. Verse 11 reads like this: Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came every one from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, and Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. For they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. Here we have the story of the kind visit which Job's three friends paid him in his affliction. Job's fame and power must have been widely known, and now the news of his extraordinary trouble was also spread into other lands. Those who were his enemies triumphed in his calamities, as we shall see later in this book, chapter 16, verse 10, 19, verse 18, 30, verse 1, etc. But his true friends were concerned about him, and they tried to comfort him. Proverbs 17:17 says, A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Three of Job's friends are named here: Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. We shall later meet a fourth friend who it seems was present at the whole comfort, named Elihu. These four friends are all thought to be descendants of Abraham, yet from those families of Abraham which were not included in the great promise given to Abraham. Eliphaz descended from Teman, the grandson of Esau, Genesis 25:2. Bildad descended from Shua, Abraham's son by Keturah, Genesis 25:2. Zophar is thought to be a descendant of Zepho, a descendant of Esau, Genesis 36:11. Elihu, the Buzite, named at chapter 32:2, was a descendant of Abraham's brother Nahor, Genesis 22:21. These men are wise men. Although they are likely nomad princes, the heads of great families or nations. The preserving of so much wisdom and godliness among those that were strangers to the covenant of promise gives us a lot of insight to God's grace to the Gentiles during the patriarchal age. The patriarchal age was an age in which God dealt with the heads of families in any nation. It didn't just have to be those directly descendants of Abraham and the covenant. It is a welcome and encouraging thing to know in these latter days. Now that the partition wall has finally been taken down by Christ, Esau was rejected, yet many that came from him inherited great blessings. These friends of Job showed their friendship in two ways: by the kind of visit they paid to him in his affliction, to mourn with him and to comfort him. Ecclesiastes 7:4 says, The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. James 1:27, pure religion, and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. They also showed their friendship by their tender sympathy with him and concern for him in his affliction. Verse 12 says, And when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept, and they rent every one his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. When they saw him at a distance, they knew him not. They could not recognize their friend. His face was foul with weeping. Chapter 16:16. Is this Job? What a change in such a short period of time. How is thy glory stained, and all thine honor laid in the dust? Hast thou fallen, and may God prepare us for such changes? As they observed him in such an altered state, they did not leave him in disgust or self-pity. They lifted up their voice and wept. They wept aloud. They rent their clothes and sprinkled dust on their heads, as men that would strip themselves and degrade themselves, as Job was stripped and degraded. Verse 13 says, So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spake a word unto him, for they saw that his grief was very great. They sat down with him upon the ground. They put themselves into the same humble and uneasy place and posture that they found Job to be in. They had probably sat with him on couches and at his table in times of prosperity, and were willing to share with him in his grief and poverty because they had shared with him in his joy and plenty. It is not a brief visit they made, just to pay respects and be gone, but they resolved to stay with him until they saw him improve or die. For 7 days and 7 nights they sat with him. They spoke not a word during this time, either to not add to his grief or to fully assess the situation. They later said much, but this seemed to be the time to keep silent. Their long silence may indicate that what they afterwards said in the long discourse before us was well considered and thought out, so their words were the result of many thoughts and therefore the wiser. In a case like this, it is especially wise to think wise before we speak. Proverbs 15:28, the heart of the righteous studieth the answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. So these friends of Job probably thought the wisest thing to do now was just to sit and meditate and assess the situation before they spoke or gave any kind of advice. And this brings the second chapter of Job to a close.